they were explained. So were the periwinkles of Worcester, but we had reasons for omitting from our credulities the story of the mad fishmonger of Worcester and his frenzied assistants. In The Zoologist, February, 1911, Mr. E. Ernest Green, the government entomologist, of Ceylon, explained. 10 years before, Mr. Oliver Collett, in a place about 50 miles from Kalutara, had received some of these snails from Africa, and had turned them loose in his garden. Then, because of the damage by the monsters, he had destroyed all, he thought, but he was mistaken, some of them having survived. In Kalutara lived a native, who was related to other natives, in this other place, Watala. In a parcel of vegetables that he had brought from Watala, two of these snails had been found, and had been turned loose in Kalutara, and the millions had descended from them. No names, no date. All the accounts, in the Ceylon Observer, in issues from July 27 to September 23, are of a sudden and monstrous appearance of huge snails, packed thick, and not an observation upon them until all at once appeared millions. It takes one of these snails 2 years to reach full size. All sizes were in this invasion. Never known in Ceylon before. How they came here continues to be a mystery. According to Mr. Green's report, published in a supplement of the Ceylon Observer, September 2, stories of the multitudes were not exaggerations. He described giant snails in enormous numbers, a horde in a comparatively small space, a foreign pest. This was in a region of many plantations, and even if the hordes could have been hidden from sight in a jungle, the sounds of their gnawing and of the snapping of branches of trees under the weight of them would have been heard far. Plantations and the ceaseless sound of the munch. The vegetarian bend the sagging of trees, with their tops to the ground, heavy with snails. Natives, too, and the vegetarian bend they bowed before the invasion. They would destroy no snails, it would be a sin. A bubonic crawl lumps fall off and leave skeletons. There would be a sight like this, if a plague could hypnotize a nation, and eat, to their bones, rigid crowds. Tumors that crawl and devour clothing and flesh, disappearing congregations of bones. There was a hope for infidels. When a lost soul was found, there was rejoicing in Kalutara, and double pay was handed out, satanically. The planters raked up infidels, who sinfully gathered snails into mounds and burned them. One of our reasons for being persuaded into accepting what we wanted to accept, in the matter of the phenomenon at Worcester, was that not only periwinkles appeared, also appeared crabs, which could not fit in with the conventional explanation. Simultaneously with the invasion of snails, there was another mysterious appearance. It was of unusually large-scale insects, which, according to Mr. Green, Ceylon Observer, August 9, had never before been recorded in Ceylon. Maybe, in September, 1929, somebody lost an alligator. According to some of our data upon the insecurities of human mentality, there isn't anything that can't be lost by somebody. A look at losts and founds, but especially at losts, confirms this notion. New York American, September 19, 1929. An alligator, 31 inches long, killed in the Hackensack Meadows, NJ, by Carl Wise, 14, Peerless Place, North Bergen, NJ. But my attention is attracted by another mysterious appearance of an alligator, about the same time. New York Sun, September 23. An alligator, 28 inches long, found by Ralph Miles, in a small creek, near Wolcott, NY. In the Gentleman's Magazine, August, 1866, somebody tells of a young crocodile, which, about 10 years before, had been killed on a farm, at Overnorton, Oxfordshire, England. In the November issue of this magazine, C. Parr, a well-known writer upon antiquarian subjects, says that, 30 years before, near Overnorton, another young crocodile had been killed. According to Mr. Parr, still another young crocodile had been seen, at Overnorton. In the Field, August 23, 1862, is an account of a fourth young crocodile that had been seen, near Overnorton. It looks as if, for about 30 years, there had been a translatory current, especially selective of young crocodiles, between somewhere, say in Egypt, and an appearing point near Overnorton. If, by design and functioning, in the distribution of life in an organism, or in one organic existence, we mean anything so misdirected as a teleportation of young crocodiles to a point in a land where they would be out of adaptation, we evidently mean not so very intelligent design and functioning. Possibly, or most likely. It seems to me that an existence that is capable of sending young butchers to medical schools, and young boiler makers to studios, would be capable of sending young crocodiles to Overnorton, Oxfordshire, England. When I go on to think of what gets into the Houses of Congress, I expect to come upon data of mysterious distributions of coconuts in Greenland. There have often been sudden, astonishing appearances of mice, in great numbers. In the autumn of 1927, millions of mice appeared in the fields of Kern County, California. Kern County, California, is continuous with all the rest of a continent, so a sudden appearance of mice there is not very mysterious. In May, 1832, mice appeared in the fields of Invernessshire, Scotland. They were in numbers so great that foxes turned from their ordinary ways of making a living and caught mice. It is my impression that these mice may have arrived in Scotland, by way of neither land nor sea. If they were little known in Great Britain, the occurrence of such multitudes is mysterious. If they were unknown in Great Britain, this datum becomes more interesting. They were brown, white rings around necks, tails tipped with white. In the Magazine of Natural History, 7-182, a correspondent writes that he had examined specimens, and had not been able to find them mentioned in any book. I have 4 records of snakes that were said to have fallen from the sky, in thunderstorms. Miss Margaret MacDonald, of Hawthorne, Massachusetts, has sent me an account of many speckled snakes that appeared in the streets of Hawthorne, one time, after a thunderstorm. Because of our expressions upon teleportative currents, I am most interested in repetitions in one place. Upon May 26, 1920, began a series of tremendous thunderstorms, in England, culminating upon the 29th, in a flood that destroyed 50 houses, in Louth, Lincolnshire. Upon the 26th, in a central part of London Gower Street near the British Museum, a crowd gathered outside Dr. Mickey's house. Gower Street is in Bloomsbury. To the Bloomsbury boarding houses go the American schoolmarms who visit London, and beyond the standards of Bloomsbury, primly pronounced Bloomsbury respectability does not exist. Dr. Mickey went out and asked the crowd what it, or anything else, could mean by being conspicuous in Bloomsbury. He was told that in an enclosure behind his house had been seen a snake. In a positive sense, he did not investigate. He simply went to a part of the enclosure that was pointed out to him. Though, in his general practice, Dr. Mickey was probably as scientific as anybody else, I must insist that this was no scientific investigation. He caught the snake. The creature was explained. It was said to be a Najahaja, a venomous snake from Egypt. Many Oriental students live in Gower Street, to be near the British Museum and University College. In all probability the Oriental snake had escaped from an Oriental student. You know, I don't see that Oriental students having Oriental snakes is any more likely than that American students should have American snakes, but there is an association here that will impress some persons. According to my experience, and according to data to come, I think that somebody identified an English adder, as an Oriental snake, to fit in with the Oriental students, and then fitted in the Oriental students with the Oriental snake, arguing reasonably that if an Oriental snake was found where there were Oriental students, the Oriental snake had probably escaped from the Oriental students. As I have pointed out, often enough, I know of no reasoning process that is not parthenogenetic, and if this is the way the identification and the explanation came about, the author of them has companionship with Plato and Darwin and Einstein, and earthworms. The next day, there was another crowd, this one in a part of London far from Gower Street, Sydenham. A snake had been seen in a garden. Then a postman killed it. Oriental students do not live in Sydenham. This snake was an adder, London Daily Express, May 28. Upon the 29th, in Store Street, near Gower Street, a butcher, Mr. G. H. Hill, looked out from his shop, and saw a snake wriggling along the sidewalk. He caught the snake, which was probably an adder, picture of it in the Weekly Dispatch, of the 30th. So there were some excitements, but they were mild, compared with what occurred in a crowded part of London, June 2. See the Daily Express, June 3. Outside the Roman Catholic Cathedral, Westminster, an adder appeared. This one stopped traffic, and had a wide audience that approached and retreated, and reacted with a surge to every wriggle, in such a disproportion that there's no seeing how action and reaction can always be equal. Three men jumped on it. This one is told of, in the Westminster and Pimlico News, June 4 and 11, and here it is said that another adder had appeared in Westminster, having been caught under a mat at Morpeth Mansions. About this time, far away in North London, Willesden, an adder was killed in a field, Times, June 21. Common sense tells me that probably some especially vicious joker had been scattering venomous snakes around. But some more common sense tells me that I cannot depend upon common sense.